Everybody, welcome to a quick edition of the Friday Filibuster. I'm not going to lie to you. I want to get these clowns recorded and out of here so I can watch an episode of Vikings, which I love. So this is Dave Johnson, joined by Mac McIntyre.
How can do.
Eric Ashersliger.
Hello.
And Daryl Loomis.
Howdy.
And that is my what I've been up to recently. Vikings. I love it. I love it. Big fan of it. History Channel really delivered for me. So I will continue to gush about it as it continues to get good. But, Mac, what have you been up to?
After it got so much word of mouth and everyone was talking about it, I decided I had to break down and go see Spring Breakers.
Oh, yeah. And?
It was interesting. This is a movie that's going to be analyzed and discussed and talked about ad nauseum forever.
It's that much clout?
Well, you know, that's the thing. It's being sold as this, you know, happy-go-lucky, cute bikini girl movie. But then you go see it, and it's really, you know, grimy and dirty. And the whole point is that, you know, we're going to take the cute bikini girls and we're going to turn them into something just ugly and make you hate them. And
sounds like Harmony Korine to me.
Yes, it does. So, yeah, it's, and you know, it's taking all these conventions and, you know, just making them really just ugly and gritty and dirty and I don't know. So it's interesting in that way. It is well filmed. I'll give Korine credit for that. A lot of the shots that he comes up with are, you know, it's a good looking movie, but it's kind of, that's on purpose because underneath all that good lookingness is all this, you know, ugliness and mean spiritedness. So, yeah. But it's definitely a movie with the filmmakers standing up and saying, you know, this is what I have to say. Which, nice. That can kind of be at the expense of, you know, the story and the character. I mean, I don't know any of the characters' names. There's just that Disney girl and that Disney girl and that Disney girl.
Right.
But, yeah, so.
James Franco.
And James Franco, yes. He really brings it in this one. He doesn't hold anything back. He shows us how nutty he really is. So this isn't reserved James Franco. This is like crazy James Franco. It's, you always get one or the other. So it was interesting. I think if you're looking for something different, check it out. But just know it's kind of I don't want to say a message movie, a statement movie, more than it is just a traditional narrative.
All right. Eric?
We wrapped up this last season of Justify last night. Dave, did you ever get around to watching it?
Never did.
Okay.
It's never caught up after all the craziness. So
yeah, that makes sense. So yeah, I think it's a very good season. I think that there's a central mystery that works pretty well. I'm a big fan of Justified in general. There always seems to be like at least one side plot every season that I'm less thrilled with, and that usually kind of wraps up after the main plot has wrapped up, which is sort of kind of creates this weird coda. I think it's one of the reasons why you and I were left with bad taste in our mouth after the second season, even though I think probably if I went back and watched second season, I think it was much better than I did when I first watched it. This one has a similar sort of subplot that ties into something that happened last season. I think they do a better job making it all fold into the story, you know, the general plot of the entire season. The last few episodes, really great, really, really exciting, really thrilling. And there's a really great performance in the season by Patton Oswalt. And he has,
Did see an episode. I must have watched a couple episodes. I did see him in it.
Yeah. He plays a part kind of two thirds of the way through the season that, is, you know, he's doing stuff I've never seen Patton Oswalt do. And he does a great job. So I think, you know, big propers, I think, as the kids say, to Mr. Oswalt. So, good for him. Yeah, it was fun. Someday you should watch it.
Right? I should. I need to. I definitely.
There aren't many Vikings in the season, but I think you might like it all the same.
I know. It's regrettable that I haven't gotten around to it. Daryl, what do you got?
Big thing for me this week was the season premiere of Mad Men.
Haven't watched that yet, so easy on any spoilers.
Yeah, no spoilers. It was a good episode. It'll be interesting to see where they go. It seems like they've skipped ahead in time a little more than they did in previous seasons, but you can kind of see where it's – because there's not going to be very much longer with it. There might be another season. mm-hmm. of it. Maybe one more past that, but I don't think that Matthew Weiner has any intention of going much farther than where he is right now. And you can kind of start to see where things are breaking down, not in a bad way, but where the characters are starting to break down, especially some of the main characters, and especially after some of the things that happened in the previous season. Good stuff, always, as always, very well produced, very well written, very well acted. Can't wait to see where it goes from here.
All I know is that John Hamm is the voiceover for like every commercial now. Which yes. makes complete sense.
It makes complete Draper. Sense. And the funny thing about the show that's very old, that very old school and has actually nothing to do with the show but with AMC is that they are constantly having show sponsors rather than just the regular ads, obviously. But this week, Mad Men and Lincoln are proud to present, or AMC and Lincoln are proud to present Mad Men. So it's got this like overbearing show sponsor. So it's just, it makes perfect sense.
But they don't like insert Lincolns into the show. Like
they have before.
Like in 24, you know, the Hyundai Genesis. Okay.
They have before. At one point, Betty Draper's father has just gotten a new Lincoln.
Gotcha.
So it happens. But of course, it's ripe for that sort of thing. It's, you know, and
right.
that's one of the reasons why I think AMC supports it so much is that it allows them to just throw in product placement
True.
Because it's natural. It's part of the product placement is part of the plot. So
AMC and Philip Morris bring you.
bring me, yeah. And if they could have, they would have. but it's, yeah, I mean, that stuff, you know, that stuff's natural to the show, and it's a little bit jarring because it's so over the top sometimes.
Right.
But it never really gets in the way of the show. They don't. It's not like they say, you know, it's not like the Burger King scene in Arrested Development.
Yes, it's a great place.
It really is. Great restaurant.
But it's funny because I've only ever watched Mad Men, you know, in streaming and DVD. Like we just finished watching season 5 because it hit Netflix recently, and I've never noticed or tied any of that product placement in because I don't have those kind of wraparound segments to put it in focus.
Yeah, and it's there, but it's not like, you know, it's not like there was a Lincoln in this episode. But you know, they're constantly talking, like in season 5 they were constantly talking about Jaguar. You know, obviously that's an ad. But it doesn't make any difference to the plot or anything like that. So it's not anything that's really obtrusive. It's just part of – it's interwoven into the show, and it's always been there. So.
Where's Pete? He's driving his new Lincoln. Oh, that's not, what that car
it's not
was
like,
Lincoln?
It's not like Kevin Spacey on the House of Cards coming home and playing his PS3 and talking about how great the PS Vita is.
Oh, really? Oh, man.
Yeah, totally. Ouch. In the show.
Ouch.
A little jarring.
Man, my favorite still remains Burn Notice, where I can't remember his name. Michael, right? He mm-hmm. he always does those little voiceovers about spycraft, and then he gets into a car chase in his blue Hyundai. I think he's driving a Hyundai Genesis or something, and he just talks it up like he's a dealer. It is over, and it's great. So, all right. Yeah, Mad Men. Can't wait to tap back into that. Man, need to play a lot of catch-up here. I won't regale you any more Vikings, which is great, if I haven't mentioned it already. So, moving on to stuff.
How do you feel about it? It's a good show?
Good stuff.
Okay.
Right up.
Now, it's on the History Channel. Are there a lot of World War II planes in the show?
There are. More than you would expect.
Yeah.
More
yeah,
than
nobody knows.
All right. Okay.
And a lot of loggers just out of nowhere. So, okay, stuff we got for the site. Man, I'll go again because I got nothing. But a movie called Collaborator I reviewed, starring David Morse. And it's one of those movies that is like it'd be like an off-Broadway play that someone videotaped. You know what I mean?
Really?
It's just like takes place primarily in one place with two actors dialoguing with each other. So, and the two actors they're good to go, but it just seems, I don't know, you just watch it like, well, this is essentially a play. So, and it kind of was a little slow. It was a hostage drama, but just really surrounding these two characters. And I don't know, in my review I just wrote, I feel like by saying I don't like this movie, I feel like a caveman. You know, it's like I need to like this movie probably, but I just don't. Because so, yeah. So Collaborator, that's what it's called. So I don't know. I got nothing else to add. So Mac, how about you?
Yeah, way back when I very first started writing for DVD Verdict, one of the very first movies I ever reviewed was this Japanese movie that's just insane called Battlefield Baseball.
No, yes, sounds awesome.
Well, now all these years later, the sequel has come out, and it's called Deadball.
Yeah, I was really interested in that.
I did see that as
bizarre.
It's the same director and the same lead actor are back, and more... just insane carnage on the baseball field. The idea here is that this is a bad movie, but it's bad on purpose. Like, the filmmakers are in on the joke, and they're like, haha, look at us, we're making a bad movie. So if you kind of go in knowing that, then you can just watch all the crazy gore effects and all the silly slapstick and not have to worry that there's no story. So.
Nice. Eric?
I'll keep it short. This week I'm reviewing The Sandlot on Blu-ray, and I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
Right.
I've seen it before, and I remember thinking it was okay. We'll see.
Yeah, huge cult following for that movie.
It does. I have a fleeting memory of maybe like a giant dog.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right. That's all I got.
Yeah, it was. I'm more surprised that it's the 20th anniversary of it. It's just one of those things.
Yeah, it's true. I was surprised as well.
All right, Daryl.
Baseball cards.
Yes.
For the characters, so I can say that.
For me, I've got one of limited interest, but that I will recommend in a weird way. That's an odd documentary called "The Exorcist in the 21st Century."
That's a documentary.
Yeah, it's about exorcism. It's about exorcists in today, and it's very strange, in that it's very normal. The exorcists who are interviewed, there's only a few in the world, and they interview two of the primary ones, they treat it very much like a business. They're very serious about what they're doing. And they feel very strongly about what they're doing, but they are always sure to tell the camera that they're the third in the step. Like, there's the doctor who needs to see the person, then there's the psychiatrist who needs to see the person. And if both of those things fail, then they may come into play if they deem it necessary. But what's really most interesting about the movie is its primary exorcism is this Colombian woman who claims to have been possessed by demons for the past 15 years. And there's some clips of her exorcism in the movie. But one of the special features is the 45-minute film of her exorcism. And it is extremely unsettling.
Hmm.
I am not one who believes in demonic possession.
Well, you're missing out, my friend.
Oh, man. But it's hard for me to believe that these people believe that it, or under that these people know it's a scam, that they think it's a scam. I mean, if this woman going insane on the floor of a shed is in on a scam, is acting, get this woman in pictures. Mm. It's about 45 minutes, the clip. It took me about 3 hours to watch it. Because I had to stop. It's too much. I mean, I'm a huge horror fan, obviously. But this is something different. And it's, as I said, extremely unsettling. So, it has its value. It's a good documentary. It's of limited interest to a lot of people, I'm sure. But just to see that footage is pretty interesting, and I won't forget it for a while.
All right. Wow. Sounds like you definitely have the most memorable release of all of us. So thank you for salvaging this podcast. So let's see if we've got more to salvage with our ambush topics. We're making excellent time. You guys are going to get me into the halls of Valhalla like crazy, so I appreciate it. So random topics short of each other. We all know how it works. I will go first. I've been playing a lot of Ninja Gaiden 3 Razor's Edge just because I cannot get enough of Ninja Gaiden. I am fully admit that. I have a pathological problem. So, ninjas. That is your... That is what you have to do with ninjas.
All right, well, I'm going to go with the worst, potentially. I'm not going to say absolutely the worst, but potentially the worst film in the late Chris Farley's body of work, Beverly Hills Ninja.
I remember paying money to go see that and laughing, ooh. So that's got to be bad everywhere. That's bad news for me.
He does jump around a lot, yeah. as he was wont to do.
He was wont to do.
Chris Rock is in that too, right?
Yeah, and it's of course David Spade.
Of course.
What's worse though, Beverly Hills Ninja or Beverly Hills Chihuahua?
I never saw Beverly Hills Chihuahua, but I would probably put my money on that one.
that is indeed a movie that exists, though. Right?
It's a franchise. There's like three of them.
Just double checking now.
Beverly Hills Cop is pretty good, though.
Beverly Hills Cop isn't
bad. Yeah. Yeah. But although I might take Beverly Hills Ninja over Beverly Hills Cop 2.
let's see. I'll keep it in the video game family with the classic arcade game Shinobi, which is a side-scroller where you can, like, throw stars at
good stuff.
Bad guys. And after you went far enough, the stars got replaced by the laser gun, and then you were pretty much unkillable. And... And if you got far enough into the game, Spider-Man has a cameo. He crawls down on the wall at one point. And
that was in the pre. I mean, there was one with Spider-Man, Batman, and Godzilla.
Oh, really?
In the very first issue of the cartridge, and they redid it because they lost all the rights. I think I still have that kicking around somewhere.
I've always wondered if that was like a legal thing, Marvel knew that Spider-Man was in this game or not.
Yeah, it's all.
Somebody once told me that Captain America was in it too, but I never. I think that was he was messing with me. I don't think Captain America.
The Terminator was in it.
The Terminator was just a big robot?
No, you fight the Terminator. Like, guy looks like Arnold, and then part of his face pulls off, and it's the metal, the metal endoskeleton. So
yeah, all kinds of copyright notices.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I guess I'll go with the League of Shadows and Batman Begins.
That's good, huh? They are indeed ninjas and shadowy.
Ninjas. Shadowy.
I'll go with some pathetic ninjas, though, when you're in your vein there, Eric. The Foot Clan.
Yes.
Very pathetic. They're very pathetic ninjas. Whether in all manner of media, whether it's the video game where they just blow up after getting swatted on the face of the Donatello staff. Or the live-action films, so.
What about
this? It's skateboarding, right?
Right.
Sure. Right? Was that Shredder's big... Okay, I don't know.
What about, Foot Clan versus Stormtroopers? Who's the more worth
it
spotter?
I'm taking the Foot Clan. Really? I think the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were just that bad.
So the Foot Clan are more inept than Stormtroopers?
No, I would take the Foot Clan in a fight.
Oh, they think they would. Wow. Okay. So,
I mean, I guess the stormtroopers were knocked out by Ewoks.
Yeah, like rocks and junk. I mean, nothing.
Yeah. Gotta correct some kind of. That's why ninja training would come in handy somehow.
Although the thuggy take a back seat to no one for their.
That's fair.
So, because those guys got their butt kicked by emaciated slave children. Let's all remember that. Okay, Mac.
Okay, well, in honor of a new sequel to Battlefield Baseball and to a lesser extent to The Sandlot, what about Weirdness on the Baseball Field?
Oh, so much to choose from in Naked Gun. I'm going to go with I'm going to take all of them. So you, I have nothing for you.
All right, fine.
The second baseman getting hit by the convertible, that's a good one. And then the tiger mauling one of the outfielders. And then the guy's head comes flying off. That's a good one, too. So, yeah, so great. I was thinking about the Naked Gun when a lot of the controversy over that Tampa Bay pitch. It's like, that is Enrico Palazzo again, isn't it? Enrico Palazzo strikes back.
All right, I'm going to go with Air Bud, seventh inning fetch.
Oh, man.
Because it's Air Bud.
Are you going to let him get away with that, Eric?
Winging a bat.
Well, at that, look, at that point, Air Bud's not really Air Bud.
He belongs to all of us. He does. No.
I mean, Air Bud is sacrosanct, but pretty much anything after the first Air Bud is fair game as far as I'm concerned.
Once you've seen the title, Seventh Inning Fetch,
yeah,
is there really any need to see the movie beyond that?
How could you possibly go wrong with a subtitle like Seventh Inning Fetch?
Now, I've never actually seen this movie, but I assume that if there are angels in the outfield, I assume there are angels in the outfield and angels in the outfield, and that's, you know, that's
there are, yes.
Certainly odd on the baseball.
I mean, and Christopher Boyd is an angel.
Yeah, Heaven really wants the Angels to win the series, and yes. I don't know why, because Mike Socha is their manager, and that's gross.
It's because the little kid said the prayer, and the... And magic happened.
Please, Lord, get us out of this Vernon Wells contract.
And they did. The prayer worked.
And the Yankees came along. Hello, Lucifer. It's in the Yankees. Back to you, I guess.
All right. Well, for me, I went to one of my favorite shows of all time, Futurama, with Blurnsball, which is their futuristic version of a baseball. And basically it's just the exact same game, except the ball is attached to this large, like, elastic tether, or like a bungee cord, and it bounces and stretches and swings all over the ball field. But on rare occasions, though, it goes into multi-ball.
Nice.
Where, if the score hits a certain point, all the different balls come flying out all at once, and then the motorcycle shows up and goes around the bases, and the bases explode, and then the door opens, and the guy riding the giant tarantula comes out. It's like, I hope I live long enough in my lifetime to see all this actually adapted into professional sports.
Nice. Daryl, did I skip you on that one? Did we skip you?
No, I had Air Bud.
Air Bud, that's
seventh inning fetch.
That's true. I had promptly blocked that finish. all right, well, Daryl, why don't you go? Why don't you go next?
I'm going to go with. I had a conversation with my brother a few days ago about a terrible movie called Edmund that David Mamet wrote and directed. It has one of my favorite elderly actresses in it. And so that's what I'm going with, Strange Elderly Actresses.
Strange Elderly Actresses. Wow.
I'll go with the Rapping Grandma and the Wedding Singer.
Of course. Wasn't she in a bunch of commercials and stuff around
she
that
probably, I assume she was.
She was in... Wasn't she in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation?
She's in a lot of movies.
Yeah, there you go. All old people look alike. Sorry if that's ages.
I go with Mama Fratello and whoever her actress is. Yeah. Rest in peace. I know she left us. She departed.
Yeah, it was Anne Ramsey.
Anne Ramsey, yep. Very good, very good.
Saying she got thrown from the train.
She got thrown from the train. Did she ever, she ever played, a cheerful role? Or was her face just made, I mean, was she, biologically, was it possible for her to smile or her face brighten? I don't think so. I think she got pigeonholed. But, yep, that was, she certainly was gruff.
Yes. let's see. I can't do that.
Sure you can.
No, I made a promise to Eric I wouldn't do Star Trek anymore.
And I hold you to it.
Yeah. Who are you going to go with?
I was going to go with Kai Opaka from Deep Space Nine.
I was hoping for Shatner. But...
Yeah, eventually it sort of resembled that.
It did. Star Trek, well, since I blurted it, I'll just go with that. Good. I'm sorry.
But, that's fine. I don't count that as Star Trek anyway. So it's
well, that's the thing about Deep Space Nine. It kind of established itself as being completely different from everything else from Star Trek. Right at the start, when Kai Opaka shows up, grabs the captain's ear and says, "Have you ever sensed your paw?" or whatever that line was. And that's when you knew that, we are...
Is that a line character. From Little House on the Prairie?
No, it's with the hard kind of sound, like your paw.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah.
Your paw?
It's where you enter your spiritual mind straight and commune with the prophets that live inside the wormhole, and they show you visions of your past, present, and future.
You lost me at Wormhole. What do you got, Daryl?
All right. Yeah, I got lost too. I'm going to go. My favorite elderly female performance is that of Masha in Videodrome, the old woman with tastes in much younger men who warns James Woods about messing with the Videodrome signal. They aren't dangerous because they're crazy. They're dangerous because they have a philosophy. One of my favorite bits in any of Cronenberg's movies.
Very good. Once again, bringing high culture to this podcast.
That's Videodrome.
Although you did recently mention seven innings fetch, so
fetch, yeah.
Screw you.
Just incidentally, the woman in Edmund is Frances Bay, who is the grandmother in Happy Gilmore, and is one of David Lynch's big players.
She was Michael Bay.
Yeah. I heard that name from somewhere.
Yeah. All right, Eric, wrap us up.
All right, countdowns.
I definitely want to say Final Countdown in honor of the rest of all, but I won't.
You ever listen to the lyrics of that song?
Final Countdown.
It's the Final Countdown over and over again.
No, they are some of the most bizarre lyrics. It's about nuclear war, and it's about traveling to Venus. It's really worth. They're really worth looking at. So anybody out there who wants to go look at a lyric sheet of the Final Countdown is in for a good laugh.
So I'm trying to think of a particularly egregious countdown that doesn't follow the actual rules of time and space, you know? So.
That's a lot of them. Yeah.
Okay, I recall it now. It's Flash Gordon. The count. A lot of things wrong with the whole countdown to the destruction of Earth, right? So when he attacks and is flying, what was that ship called? Anyone know? What's the name? Ajax, right? War Rocket Ajax. Yeah, there's a countdown going, and that's when Earth is going to blow up. And I don't know, if you watch that sequence, the amount of action that transpires versus the countdown, it's pretty out of whack. But I always wondered, like, even if they stop the countdown, isn't Earth kind of screwed anyway? I mean, for that whole time, they've just been hot-hailed upon, and the moon's been crashing into them. I mean, does it really make a difference? If there's 0.03 left, the countdown. I don't know.
Remember, they're not using Earth time; they're using Mongo time.
Thank you. Yeah, that's right. I like it's one of my favorite parts of Max Payne when you go into Mongo time to and take down the villains. Yeah.
Well, the classic, of course, the all-time great one is Goldfinger.
Yes.
If you remember the end of that movie? I mean, you know, that's classic. There's no topping that. Although they certainly tried in Octopussy, when Bond is defusing the bomb and yes. Clicks off just on the exact second it hits zero, while, of course, Bond is wearing clown makeup.
Hey, how much – I still can't believe how much time he wasted, like, carefully applying the clown. Yes.
Did a really good job on that.
He could have rushed it, gone with the nightmare clown look, you know. And now, didn't Goldfinger end on 007, though, right?
Yes. Yeah, with the music sting. Yeah.
Nice.
All right, well, I'm going to go – this isn't quite a countdown so much as a time – as a it's not specifically counted down. But in Doctor Who, in the first episode of Season 5 of the new Doctor Who, the Doctor, after a while, is given – claims he has exactly 20 minutes to save the world with 35 minutes left in the show.
Nice.
So, and he wins, obviously, but it does take him the full 35 minutes, and it takes place during a 25 minutes here, or 20 minute time period. So,
and they drive from one end of town to the other during that sequence too.
Yes, they do.
It's like 24.
Yes, a lot. Yes. Like 24 in that way.
Oh, wormholes and stuff. All right. Well, I recently rewatched the movie Identity, the
John Cusack movie.
That's the one. Yeah. And that the whole large part of the movie is around these people who are dying in a motel, and each time someone dies, they're found with a a motel key with the next number counting down from 10. So there you go.
That's good.
That's the only movie.
It isn't bad. That's the only movie I've ever figured the twist out of on my own.
Yeah, really? Yeah.
Only one ever. So.
Yeah. Going back and rewatching it, like knowing the twist, it's amazing how much information they give you at the beginning but don't really tell you they're giving you. I wouldn't say that it's really that cleverly done, but they put it out there. So if you watch it again, it's almost worth rewatching it.
Oh, I remember that movie. I hated the ending of that movie. I liked the whole movie, but hated the ending.
I could see that.
I had forgotten entirely about that movie until just now. So, thank you for making me revisit that awful ending.
No problem. It's on Netflix if you want to revisit it for real.
Nope.
Okay.
Well, with that cheerful aside, let's cap this so I could go and do important things like read. Yes, that's what I'll be doing, reading. So. That's it for the Friday Filibuster, a nice quick version. Join us next week. As always, Mac, Eric, Daryl, thanks. Mac, take us away.
No, not the boar worms.